This is Can I Laugh on Your Shoulder? Hey, welcome to Can I Laugh on Your Shoulder? I'm Molly Stillman, and this is a podcast where I get to sit down with a different guest each week and have raw, funny, often brutally honest conversations about the things that matter most. Faith, business, life, and everything in between, where we each learn how to be good stewards of the things we've been entrusted with, even our stories, and how we can use those things to serve others and our families and our friends and our communities and leave them a little bit better than we found them. I want to create a space where people are unafraid to be themselves and unafraid to ask the questions the rest of us are thinking. My goal is to make you laugh, cry, and laugh till you cry. Let me tell you, I have been looking forward to this week's episode for a very long time. My guest this week is the incredible, the hilarious Dustin Nickerson. He is a Seattle native now suffering in Southern California, and he is an in-demand comic on the rise. In 2020, he released his debut comedy special, Overwhelmed, which is currently one of the highest rated specials on Amazon Prime Video. And he also has a special that was released last year on YouTube, and it is hilarious. He's been featured on Comedy Central and Netflix by Kevin Hart, The Late Late Show with James Corden, Fox, Hulu. He can be regularly heard on Sirius Radio XM. Online, his stand-up clips and his jokes have received tens of millions of views, and his podcast, Don't Make Me Come Back There, has over a million downloads. He's also the author of How to Be Married to Melissa, an Amazon number one new release published by HarperCollins back in June of 2022. And he describes himself as the world's most average person, but he's far from it when he is on stage. He brings you into his life through his jokes about the struggles of parenting, marriage, and being generally annoyed by most people. He's been married for over 18 years. He has three kids, and this helps make Dustin truly one of the most unique voices in the comedy scene. I have long been a fan and just lover of Dustin's comedy. I read his book, How to Be Married to Melissa, back when it released. It's so funny. He truly is hilarious. And let me tell you, this conversation did not disappoint. And I definitely said this to him. Like, I'm always a little nervous when I have a comedian on because I'm like, you know, I'm not going to try to be funny, but oh my goodness. We basically did bits for 45 minutes. And so if you want to laugh today, then you should listen to this conversation. Sure, we get into some kind of deep nitty gritty stuff about maybe the human emotions and experience and introversion versus extroversion. But at the end of the day, we just had fun for 45 minutes. And I'm telling you, you are not going to be disappointed. It's so funny. I listened back to this conversation after the fact, which I never do, and just kept laughing throughout it. Dustin is hilarious. So I know you want to get into this conversation, but before we do, I gotta say it. We are less than 2 weeks from the release of my first book, If I Don't Laugh, I'll Cry, How Death, Debt, and Comedy Led to a Life of Faith, Farming, and Forgetting What I Came Into This Room For. Yes, it releases on Tuesday, March 26th. I'm so excited. I cannot believe this day is almost here. And I would just love it right now. If you are listening to this episode, if I've made you laugh or cry, or if I've encouraged you at any point in time, would you please go pre-order this book? You can get it wherever you get your books, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, Walmart. Would you pre-order it online? Also, if you love indie bookstores like I do, reach out to your local indie bookstore and ask them to carry it. You can pre-order it through them a lot of the times. And so I would just love if you would do that. Would you please go pre-order the book right now? It'll be on your doorstep on launch day on March 26th. It's a huge, huge encouragement and support to me. And I'm just so grateful. I'm so excited. And now let's get into some laughter. Without further ado, onto my chat with Dustin Nickerson.
Oh, this is going to be so fun. I've been looking forward to this for a long time. Dustin Nickerson, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Molly. I appreciate this.
Like I told you before we started recording, we're probably just going to do bits for 45 minutes. And great. That is, I'm okay with that.
Fantastic deal.
No. Well, So as somebody who used to do comedy, but I did stand up like twice. And I was like, this is not my jam. I would prefer to just do improv and sketch. But who was in the comedy world for a long time. It's interesting that since I started hosting a podcast, 7.5 years ago, anytime I have a comedian on, I feel this like strange pressure within me. I remember when I had your friend, Kevin Fredericks, Kev on stage. I had him on the show a few years ago, and I had never been more nervous to do an interview. Ha!
And he's like the nicest, kindest human. We were literally the last text I sent before I got on here was to him. He's just, he's the kindest, most supportive guy in the world. But I get it. There can be a pressure to be like, be funny. Yeah, but I will tell you, like, there is nothing comedians like less than people trying to be funny.
100%. 100%. Again, like when people find out that I used to do comedy, they're always like, tell me a joke. And I'm like, not at all how this works.
I'd rather not. No, I do that. I do that at night. I can't just be funny at the track meet at 3. Nothing about this is funny. I shower. I have caffeine. I go to the club. And then everyone sits down. Ideally is quiet while I tell them what I wrote in advance. It's a very different thing than like yucking it up at a party.
100%. 100%.
But improv is more like that. In my experience, improvisers are much more traditional life of the party extroverts. Like you just saying you're doing 7 interviews and you're getting like near the point of not wanting to talk to anybody. That's my baseline of not wanting to talk to anybody. This is all I have today.
Well, let me tell you something coming from the improv world. So here is a common misconception. And then I promise we're going to get into the actual interview.
Rather not get into the actual interview, by the way. I have no interest.
No interest.
I have zero interest in any pre-thought out questions.
Oh, I don't have any pre-thought out questions.
Great. Because they're all the same.
No.
But you know that.
Oh, look, my computer even just gave me the like automatic thumbs up. It thought I was giving you a thumbs up. So I agree.
Oh, that's fun. Do I get one of those?
I don't know. You have to hold it up. We have to test it out.
Which fingers does it give me that one?
Yeah, there is actually.
Give me a hang loose?
You can do a thumbs down, I think.
Only you, apparently. I don't get any of the fun stuff.
You don't get any of the fun.
It's for the best. As someone with ADHD, that would be the rest of the. I would be like, which things am I allowed to do?
Okay, let's see if it does it. Hold on. If I do 2 thumbs up, I think it gives me fireworks. Yeah, there we go.
What? That's unbelievable.
I know. And then if I do 2 thumbs down, hold on. It starts raining.
Oh, I got nothing.
I don't know.
Well, I don't know if that's your host or because you paid for Riverside, but there you go.
No,
that's the we can give you some emojis.
It's apparently a Mac feature, like a new Mac like programming feature, but I don't know how to turn it off. And so it keeps happening during interviews. People who are listening right now to not the video version of this are like, what are they talking about?
Yeah.
You're just going to have to go
to YouTube
and watch it.
It would be funny if you had to do like an apology video and it happens. Like, I just want to apologize to my wife and my kids. My comments were absolutely unacceptable. And then the rain falls. But I'm trying to do better. I just thank you to the fans. Thank you. It would be amazing. It would really add. Really, I think that's how Gen Z is going to apologize. They're just gonna do
like interactive emojis in all of their videos.
Yeah, it's all gonna be via Twitch. Gosh. They're all gonna have to thank you for the tip. Thank you. You know.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, before I got both of us apparently ADHD totally distracted by emojis on the screen, a common misconception is people always think I'm introverted. I am the epitome, or an extroverted. I am the epitome of an introverted extrovert. If that makes sense, or an extroverted.
Yeah, that's what extroverts call themselves. I'm not going to give you this at all.
No,
there's
I'm
no
telling
such
you.
Thing.
Yes.
Nope.
I'm telling
no,
you.
No, no, no.
Disagree.
Any true introvert hates you at even the concept of calling yourself an extroverted introvert. It's okay to not be either of them, I'm not either of them.
Interesting.
I have. It just depends.
You're like independent.
It's okay to not be an extreme.
Yeah.
It's okay. I am an issues voter. I do not come in saying I'm team extrovert. I'm team introvert. I come into a situation and I go, how do I feel right now? Who's here? If it's the right people, I'm the life of the party.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so it really what it comes down to is how I feel physically and mentally in that moment.
Yeah.
And also who we're talking about. Because if I don't like the person, I'm an introvert. It's just I don't want to talk to you. But it's nothing to do with me. It's everything to do with them.
Okay, Dustin, you have now given words to something that I'm now going all neutral. Because I think you're right. I think it just depends on who I'm around, the situation. Do not put me in the middle of like a social gathering with a bunch of people that I don't really want to talk to. Like, don't make me do small talk. That is where my soul goes to die.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly it. It's okay to not be one or the other. It's okay to just be, I lean introverted. That's where I say I lean this direction, you know?
Yeah.
It also depends how much alcohol I have in me. I don't, you know, because that can tip the scales way or another. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. But you know what? But all that to say is, over the years, with all of the improvisers that I did shows with and got to meet, so many of them are incredibly introverted, and it's like their personalities come out on the other side. I think the only person that I ever got to meet who I think is legitimately as extroverted as you can imagine is Rob Riggle. I remember I was at an after party at a comedy show in the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in New York. I was in the basement of the grocery store and I was standing like kind of in the back, and Rob Riggle, and I don't even really, I mean, he just towered over me and just like bellowed words into my face, you know, just one of those situations. I'm like, yeah, this tracks. But anyway,
some people it legit gives them life.
Yeah,
they love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is not me. But let's hear about you. So give us the Dustin 101. So tell us, you know, who you are, what you do, other than obviously you're a comedian, and how you got to where you are today.
Oh, Molly, this is so boring.
It's not.
I don't know what it pains me every time to say these words a little each time. He's like, okay, so I don't know. I'm a stand-up comedian. I'm a husband. I'm a father. I'm from Seattle. I live in San Diego. I have a book. I have a podcast. I was raised by a single dad. I got one sister. That's the basics. That's my Twitter bio.
Yeah.
That's it right there. Those are like the factual, the top of the resume, you know, right there.
Faith, family, country. I think that's definitely.
Yeah, there you go. RIP Toby Keith. What a legend.
Man. Oh, I don't
want to. What a legend.
It's still tender. Okay. I love Toby. My husband and I, our first date was to a Toby Keith concert, Dustin.
Wow. That's incredible. Oh
are
my
you
gosh.
Saying that in a judgmental way?
No. Are you kidding me? No. I will judge you based on what year it was.
2010.
Great. There you go. That's a good time. where'd you see him?
At the time I think it was called Walnut Creek. Now it's like Coastal Credit Union Park or whatever in Raleigh. Yeah. But here's the other piece of it. He didn't really know it was a first date. It was me and nine
Toby Keith
him
didn't
and
know?
Nine of his friends.
Okay.
No, John.
Toby didn't know you were on a first date.
Toby
though.
Did not
Toby
know.
Toby didn't know.
He didn't know.
How did that not get to him? That's one of my favorite things when people message me and they'll be like, it's my birthday. Can I get a shout out? No, you cannot. I cannot accommodate any of these things. Oh, it's my brother's bar mitzvah. What?
I know.
It's not an all age show.
I know.
So you get a first day at, you're in Raleigh, back when the venue had a personality in its name.
Yeah.
And then how was the show?
Oh, it was awesome. You know?
Yeah.
So here's, maybe you'll appreciate this. So we were like, we worked together at the time, and I had a crush on him, and I like wasn't sure how to get him to ask me out, because I had basically come to learn that he'd never had a girlfriend, and so he was clearly like not gonna make the first move. And so I was driving into work that day, and I heard that Toby Keith lawn seats were gonna be $10 for the Saturday show, and I go into work and I was like, hey, did you hear that Toby Keith lawn seats are $10? And he's like, really? And he immediately starts texting all of his friends, Dustin. And I was like, well, this plan is backfiring. And so I was like, well, if you know, like, if you need anybody to go with you, I'll go with you. And he's like, oh, you want to go? And so it ended up being me and him and eight of his friends. And we met in the parking lot of a Bojangles.
Yeah, this is a North Carolina story.
100%.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
The amount of Bojangles in the Carolinas.
So
it's
many
insane.
Bojangles.
It's everybody, every fourth family in North Carolina has franchised a Bojangles. Everyone there is in the Bojangles franchising business.
It's Bo time, baby. It's Bo time.
It's Bo time.
And you know, and here's a thing that you might not know. When the North Carolina Tar Heel men's basketball team, if they get 100 points at home, then the next day you can go to Bojangles and get two sausage biscuits for $1. And so,
unbelievable.
And it's happened four times this season. And I tell you, the line at the drive-thru at Bojangles the next morning, and I go. I take my kids and we
hilarious.
Go get our two sausage biscuits for $1. Because it's a big savings. Because now with Joe Biden's inflation, it's like $4.50 for two sausage biscuits.
Yeah, you're right. 100% his fault. Yeah. He didn't have to recover. He didn't have to recover from a pandemic. 100% his fault. You're right. That's hilarious. I'm in the opposite camp now, where I am like a nearly 40-year-old man who's very content and grateful for, I like to say this, I'm not rich, but I'm the richest Nickerson ever. Like, I'm like, as far as my family chain goes, I'm doing pretty good. And I see those big lines and I'm like, you know what, kids? We can afford full price biscuits. We can do it. We can do a full price biscuit tomorrow or tonight or anything like that, you know? So I respect the hustle there, but I have no interest in it. That being said, we will sit in an outline for 45 minutes.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I love it.
Because it's so cheap. And so you can feed the whole family for like $30.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, and I remember like the days of, you know, I could go to Wendy's and I could get a bunch of stuff off the dollar menu, you know, and have like a full meal for $3.25. And now.
Yeah.
Now
Joe Biden, huh?
Exactly. It's all.
Joe Biden called. He resurrected Dave from the grave and he said, raise your prices, Dave.
Yes, that's exactly.
Founder of Wendy's. Exactly. How dare you? How dare you provide savings to? I was good. I I'm three blocks away from the White House right now. So I was hoping we would talk mostly about politics.
Yeah, I was really doing it in honor of the fact that as we are recording this, you are in D.C. doing shows. And I also have to just call attention to this because it's too funny that this happens to you regularly. That you will sell out a bunch of shows, but your late show never is because your audience is middle-aged parents who are like, 9:45 is far too late for me to be doing a comedy show.
Parents don't have like weekends. It's not a real thing to us.
Right.
You know, like oftentimes Saturday is the day you get up the earliest. That's your earliest call time is on a Saturday. So the idea that you would go, like tonight is a good example. Like I have a 9:45 p.m. show tonight and it's not even kind of sold well. I mean, and I told the club this. I was like, guys, I'm telling you, I know my fan base. It's not even like asking a parent to go to a 9:45, 10. Some of these shows start at 10:30.
Oh, hard
it's pass. Like, it's like asking a comedian to get like a 6:30 a.m. breakfast. Mm-hmm. You're like, what? That's not even really an option for us. So we are making the adjustments finally, but it is. And I, every time I get on stage, I'm like, I don't want to be up right now either. I'm this age. I get up and take my kids to school and help get the house. Like I know that grind as well as they do, you know? So it happens almost every city that I go to. And finally, it's so funny because we talked to the DC Improv and they switched tomorrow's show Saturdays to 6 and 8:30. Normally the shows are like 7 and 9:45 or 7:30 and 10 or something like that. And they switched and the whole staff loves it, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, well, I'm like a pioneer, I think, in early shows.
Yes.
I think people are like, the whole staff's like, you mean I get to go home earlier?
Right.
I make the same amount of money. The club makes the same amount of money. And
it's a win-win.
Like, I'm like, Oh my gosh, to do a two show night when I'm done by 10, a dream.
A dream.
A dream in my world. Oh,
a
can't
dream.
Wait. I'm so excited to do two shows. If I want the show to be starting while the sun is still up, that's a good show time for this guy right here and my middle-aged parent fan base.
Yes, exactly.
I had someone last night, they came to the Thursday show and they said, they're like, we feel your pain. You know, we're volleyball parents, all this is. And I was like, oh yeah, you can't come to a Friday show because you got to get up early. And they're like, yeah, we don't even know what time the tournament is. Yeah, it's like, that's exactly it. What time do you get up Saturday? You still don't know. And it's Thursday night.
Right.
Welcome to parenthood.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And also just coupled with the fact that, like, I don't think I've gotten up past, you know, 7 a.m. in a decade. Like, just, you know, now there may be days where I will wake up and I will have to do what life requires me to do. Put my children on a bus. I live on a farm. So, you know, feed animals, stuff like that. And then there will be times where I will look at my husband and go, I'm going back to sleep. You can do what you want, but I'm going back to bed. I don't have anything till 10 a.m. work wise.
Yeah.
I'm going, but I've still been up. Like I've showered, brushed my teeth.
Yeah. That's my Mondays usually. Cause I usually get home on Sundays and then, Monday it's kind of just an ongoing thing with me and Mel. If I'm like, because we record our pod on Tuesdays and then Wednesday is a lot of time my last day before. A lot of time I have to go to bed early on Wednesday. So Monday is my day where I'm like, hey, everybody's out the door. Good night. And Mel like goes in like grocery shops or something and then knocks on the door when it's time. So it'll be like 11 and I'm like lugging the groceries in, taking my first sip of coffee. It's great. I love it. I love it.
Yes. Yeah. But, you know, almost like the, you know, just the late night thing. We'd celebrated some friend last month who turned 40 and we did a surprise 40th birthday party. And we had, you know, all just people we love here in our house. And I love hosting, like, especially when it comes to just people I care about, you know, just celebrating somebody I love. And but we were all laughing that I was like, we started the party at 5 and I was like, and everyone should be out by 9. Like I would,
yes,
I just love 100%. You all so much.
Yep.
Also, can you leave by 9? And everybody was out by like 8:40 and it really, it required nothing of me. It was just, everybody was like, okay, it's about 8:15, 8:30. Like it's time to go.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think that like adult parties should go back to like little kid parties where there's a hard end time.
Yeah.
You know, and just so you know, like you're not welcome past this hour.
Yeah.
This is no longer, this business is closed.
Yeah.
This was a party business for 3 hours. Get out of my house. It's because when they leave, then there's still work to do and you got to clean up. And I mean, that's one of the great things about leaving a party at somebody else's house. Can I do anything? Which I'm not actually going to, but I'm being polite. See ya.
So are you not? Okay. All right. Here's a question. If you go to a party at somebody else's house, do you make rounds when you leave or do you do a good old Irish goodbye?
Well, it's very unlikely that this premise even happens in the first place. I'm full disclosure, Molly, I cannot remember the last time I went to a party at somebody's house.
That's true. Why am I asking this question?
I really want to know. I can't think of it. It's been years. I mean, I've gone to plenty of places for kids' birthday parties.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That doesn't count. No, you know what? I can't. I don't do an Irish goodbye. I do an Irish hello. I'm never there. I was never there in the first place. Like, I didn't make it. I can't. Yeah. I didn't leave without saying goodbye. I didn't come without saying hello. That's what I did.
Exactly. I love obviously, you know, we could talk stand up bits all day long, but in Nate Bargatze's latest special, his whole bit about your 20s, 30s and 40s, where like in your 20s, you're like, I'll go, I'm down. Like I'll set my apartment on fire. I'm down. And he's like, in your 30s, you're like, who's going to be there? Can I drive separate? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. And then in your 40s, you're like, I'm offended you even asked me. And it's the most
true thing
I've ever experienced in my life.
Yeah, I just don't even, I'm surprised that people really like still have friends at my age. Like, you have friends? So many reasons, like, oh, that's my best friend. I'm like, best friend? Grow up. We don't have best friends anymore. What are you? You cultivated a best friend? This is embarrassing. You guys write letters to each other? Grow up. Are you gonna have matching Halloween costumes? Yeah, I don't get it. I was like, I got a lot of people I know. and some of them I'm friendlier with, but I don't that's such a little kid question. Who's your best friend? Okay, do you want to know my favorite color? What's my favorite animal? Who's your best friend? I sound like a little get to know you sheet in second grade.
Well, it's a shame because all of
what we're filling out now is like, what was your income this year? These are the way we, what's your tax ID number?
Yeah. Have you had any surgeries in the last 3 to 5 years?
Oh, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Does your family have a long history of heart disease? Yes. Are you depressed? Yes. Why? See the heart disease question. That's why. Read this. They shouldn't even have to ask about anxiety, depression. They should just read your physical conditions and like your family history. And they'd be like, yes, it's like a math equation. AI should be able to figure that out based on these stats about his health, his bank account, and his family history. Get him some meds. This guy has a hard time sleeping, I bet.
Oh my gosh. Oh, it is the truest thing I've ever heard in my life. Is there been, and man, we could talk. I love talking about growing old in that, you know, more middle-aged, getting old. I'm just slightly your junior at 38. I'll be 39 in August. My husband just turned 40 this year. And there have been multiple times where in the last year or so, I'll be getting ready for bed. And it's like, I've got my eye mask and my nose strip and a mouth guard and nine pillows that I have to strategically place on my body. And I'll look at him and just go, is this what you pictured? Like when you asked me to be your lawfully wedded wife, like, is this what you envisioned? And meanwhile, he's like getting into bed, laying on an acupressure mat.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. And the reality is it's better than you imagine.
Oh, 100%. You
know, yeah. No, my wife and I will cheers our mouth guards before we go to bed.
Yes. Yes.
Good night.
You're right. It's, you know, we can laugh about it, but you're right. It's like marriage was 100%. It's 110% better than I could have even possibly imagined. Okay, so we have to talk briefly about the video of yours that has recently gone viral.
You mean the video of Mel?
Of your wife.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So for some context for our listeners who have not seen it, and I will be sure to share it in the show notes, because the laugh I laughed, the scream I scrumped, as the kids say, when you shared that in your stories made me laugh so hard. Share it for those that have not seen it.
Well, yeah, I mean, Mel, we had just recorded our podcast that day, and so she was like dressed nice. She was in full makeup.
Looked great.
She had a cool outfit on. And she had to do, I went home to do some work after the pod, and she went to go, she wasn't originally going in. She was originally just going to do a Target pickup.
Right.
And then she remembered she needed a couple things. So she walked around Target for a bit. She came home and looked in the mirror and just started laughing, because she realized that her bodysuit wasn't tucked in the back. It had become undone. So she just had like an outer thong. She had a loose whale tail just hanging over her trousers. And she showed me, and I laughed, and I was like, got the phone out. I was like, retell this story. This is unbelievable. And what I like about it too is like, it led to the discussion of would you have told somebody, but B, I told her, I was like, you're just so wonderfully endearing in this video. Your face is red, you're blushing, you look good. I talked to my sister about it. She's like, when it pops up, she was like, when I saw this video, she was like, oh, there's Melissa looking gorgeous with a cool outfit. Oh, like, what is she doing, some show off my outfit thing, which Mel never does, by the way. But And then to turn around, it's the reveal that she's embarrassed and she's laughing about it and has such a good sense of humor about it. It's I can see why it went so viral, because it's not just the moment, it's her reaction to yes. it, just being like embarrassed, but not like shamed or mad.
Right.
Just like, if you don't, I always say, like, if I don't laugh, I'll cry. That's what I always say. That's
literally the
motto.
Title of my book.
You think I didn't know that? Do you think that was just a happenstance that I just said that?
I know. No, it's so true. And I think that that's what I think your comedy in general, like, it's just that video, I feel like, is a microcosm of your comedy, of just it's, you know, it's the little bit of a self-deprecating humor mm-hmm. alongside just the real aspects of life. And it's that stuff that we just all relate to, like we were talking about and doing the bit about, you know, just our health history and how every person listening to this podcast over the age of 35 is like, uh-huh, yep. You know, as you've been doing comedy, as long as you've been doing, like, have you found, you know, that you've really honed your niche? Has your comedy changed more as you've gotten older than when you first started? You know, how has it really evolved in that same realm?
Yeah, well, I mean, you just get better at it.
For sure. Because
you just do it a lot. Like, somebody asked me that recently, of just like, you know, how did you get good at it? And I was like, I mean, I'm 12 years in and I do 250 shows a year.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, there's no trick. The only way to get good at stand-up comedy is to do stand-up comedy.
Right.
And the longer you do it, what it is you get better at having the ability to tell the stories and jokes and have the point of view that you want to have. Like, Cat Williams talks about how, you know, like, your first 7 years, like, you realize you can be funny. And then you realize after that, you realize that you are funny. Mm-hmm. And then you just go up and you kind of start to figure that out. Like, it becomes much easier to take your point of view. Now, there's certain bits that are harder to do and they're more of a tight wire act, because, you know, you're dealing with delicate topics and stuff like that. But it just becomes much easier because it's just kind of like a muscle that's honed of like, oh, I know how to write this bit. I know how to do these things. I know how to tell these stories. And I think the longer you get, you just start talking about the things that you want to talk about. Like, if you look at my first special, Overwhelmed, I think it's good and I'm proud of it. But it's 50 minutes of the best bits that I had written. And it feels like that, mm-hmm. you know, like, it's just like, this is the good bit. This is good. And then Runs in the Family, my last one, I was like, this is a more cohesive hour.
Yeah.
It's actually much more coming from, I talk more about my dad in it. I talk more about our, like, not just like parenting bits, but about my particular family and our struggles and, things we laugh and, laugh about. And then even this new hour, even more so, it's like, these are my day-to-day experiences. Here's 5 minutes on me finally, like, forgetting my passport, like, just stuff like that, where you're like, oh, this becomes significantly easier. And also, as you cultivate, like, the goal as a comedian is to make people laugh, obviously, but it no comedian is beloved by everybody. You're not trying to get everyone to love you.
Yep.
You're trying to get the people that do love you or will love your stuff to find you. And that's kind of what's happening right now for me. And I'm very grateful that, like, the people who really resonate with my comedy and what I'm going through, they're like, that's our guy. We will go see him before 10 p.m.
Yes. And then we will all go home and we will lay it on our acupressure mats with our mouth guards.
100%. Yeah. Yes.
Well, I love
Take our melatonin and go to bed.
Exactly. The melatonin key. Well, I love that perspective because you're not trying to. And I mean, I think you could really apply this to any, you know, career that is in any way, shape or form creative. Podcasting, writing a book, writing a blog, like, comedy in any way is going to, you're just not going to create something that everybody's going to like. And I remember early on in, like, when I first started doing improv, I remember, like, I would watch some of these just brilliant improvisers and I'd be like, I want to do that. And then I would do a show and I would basically just be trying to emulate what I had just seen, and it would just bomb because I'm trying to be somebody that I'm not. But then as soon as I started to, and it actually wasn't until I started an improv group with my best friends, and we just kind of had our own brand of improv, And right. it wasn't until we did that that I was like, oh, yeah, this is what we're supposed to be doing, because we're just being ourselves and we know each other and we know our each other's character strengths and things like that, that, you know, so I'm not going out. I'm not trying to be improvised Shakespeare, even though improvised Shakespeare is the greatest thing I've ever seen. I could never do that. And, so, yeah, honing that in and then realizing who your audience is so
well, and if, yeah, well, and I found, like, as somebody who it's always been important to me to be able to perform anywhere, like versatility, whatever the crowd is, young, old, white, black, like straight, gay, rich, poor, like another thing Cat Williams said was like, you don't know a joke's done until you've told it everywhere in the country. Yeah. And I do believe that. You're like, does this work everywhere? Like, that's an important thing for me. And I'm sure there's the same thing. Like, audiences are very smart. And if you are trying to be somebody that you're not, they sense it immediately. They will 1,000% like, this person is still trying and they're not authentic to who they are.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, that's how I 100, that's how crowds feel. And we feel it when we're watching entertainers going like, this isn't your wheelhouse. You're trying to be something you are, you know,
there's nothing more painful. Like, the secondhand embarrassment I would get, because so often when I would travel and do improv shows, is there was almost always like an opening stand up show. And there was nothing more like painful than just really bad stand up, like just really where it's just the from the moment the comic would step out on stage. And like,
have you not seen really bad improv?
Oh, really bad improv too. Oh,
oh my gosh. I'll give me the worst stand up comedian in the world and the worst improv.
Oh, for sure. Oh, yeah. No, I'm not comparing.
I'm not going to take that kind of shade on my art form.
No. I wasn't shading it. I was also saying that, yes, I'm very bad. Bad improv is also very, very bad. No, I meant,
but yes, I agree with you.
What I meant was, is, you know, all bad comedy across the board is just very painful. But it was like, there would be somebody who would come out and just immediately start like berating the audience.
Yes.
And then like, you have set no one up for success this evening.
Yeah. It is a really amateur move. And I've done it before where you're not getting a response and you blame them. Yeah. Right. But it is like, it's just it's a survival instinct.
Oh, totally.
That you're just like, oh no, I'm bombing. And I know it. Yeah. And blaming the, like, I get why it happens, but you're right. It's very painful to watch, especially when it was like, someone who like, it's like, I had someone recently do that. It was kind of bad mouthing my crowd. And I was like, you're just not good. Like, this is a sold out show of people who like stand up comedy.
Yeah.
They want you to be good.
Yeah.
This started in your favor. Yeah. So, man, that's,
well, you know, that was a life changing thing for me too. When I would go out to do a show, especially like, yeah, oh yeah. And because I've been a part of really bad improv shows that where it's just like,
yeah,
Lord, can we just end scene? Can we just cut this now?
Yes.
But having the mindset.
No more yes, Andy.
Yeah, no more yes, Andy.
Someone say no to an and,
no,
finally.
No, but please.
Oh.
One of the things that was life changing for me was to know, like, going into it, the audience from the get go, from the moment you step on stage, they are rooting for you. Like, they do not want to see you fail. They do not want to be a part of this.
You saying in improv?
Yeah. Well, improv, stand up,
I don't think that's true in stand up.
Really?
No. I think a crowd is. Seinfeld said this, like, they're not your enemies, but they will turn on you.
Oh.
And I think that all the time. I don't think that a crowd in stand up is necessarily rooting for you. I think that they're very nervous. I think a lot of stand-up crowds are very nervous because they're putting themselves in that situation. Mm-hmm. And that's like everybody's number one fear is public speaking. I don't think that there's a rooting interest in you necessarily. Now, if they know you and they like you, then yes, then they're rooting for it. But if you're anonymous, I think they could go either way. They're a little more Caesar-y.
That's,
you know,
fascinating.
And then they will turn bad on you too. If they're, you know, a crowd will absolutely turn on you.
Okay. That's fascinating. And I love that perspective. That's
really, I think, people that go and see improv and stand-up are different people, though.
Yeah.
Just like improvisers and stand-ups are different people. I think that there's, because the other thing is like the difference between improv, in my experience, lies somewhere in between stand-up and magic. And that there is an element of what is so impressive about improv is the trick of it all. Mm-hmm. Not that it's just so fast. There's a reveal. What's amazing about improv is how fast they can be funny.
Yeah.
And how quickly. So it is like part of the excitement is like the trick of it all. Like, oh my gosh, that's a skill I don't have.
Mm.
Whereas stand up, everything, not everything, but majority of stuff is pre-written and there is some improvisation that happens in it. But part of the reason they'll turn on you so quickly is you're giving a point of view that
yeah.
they could just straight up disagree with
yeah.
and get mad about.
Right.
Like if you're sharing your shots, you're sharing your thoughts on relationships or religion or the military or the police or the president or whatever it may, race, like they can just, they, you might just hear something that you straight up disagree with. And that does stuff like that can happen in improv, but that's obviously going to be a lot less likely
yeah.
than like, this is one person. And I think some people, that's part of the reason some people don't like stand-ups is that they're just like, who does this guy think he is? And they're right. They are right to think that, because who do we think we are? You know?
Yeah. And except, you know, jokes on them because they paid to come to the show. So, you know.
Yeah. I mean, now they do, but early on they don't.
Yeah.
Early on, there's so many free shows.
Oh, and- yeah.
comp tickets or bar hijack shows where someone was just enjoying their night at a bar and you're like, stand up starting. And they're like, what? I didn't want this. And you're like, no, I get that. I'm so sorry.
Okay. Well, I have to ask this question then, because we're talking about it and I love funny stories. Can you share a story? And I think Jerry Seinfeld to speak to that. He asked this question of Steve Martin on Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. That episode of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee is probably the funniest episode because he asks this question. He asked Steve Martin, what is the worst show you ever did? And Steve Martin proceeds to tell this story about how he was doing stand up in the lobby of a hotel in Baltimore, Maryland. And it was like, there was just massive like glass behind him. I'm paraphrasing the story. There's like massive glass walls with like the port behind him. And like the day before, this part is not funny, but somebody had like committed suicide by like rolling their wheelchair off a dock. And so he's doing stand up and a crane is like pulling a wheelchair out of the water behind him, and
yeah.
Steve Martin is having to do a show while all of this is happening behind him, and he's recalling this to Jerry Seinfeld. I'm clearly not doing the story justice, so everyone just needs to go watch it. But
yeah,
he's just talking about, he's like, there's nothing worse. Like, you could never, it just, that is the rockest of rock bottom.
Yeah. Yeah, there is. I mean, listen, I don't have one there because there's a million. There's so many bad shows. I'm trying to think about ones I haven't told before. Like,
just one that like really when you tell it, you're yeah, just like, if I don't laugh, I'll cry.
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. There's such a long list of them. Like, I don't think that people realize. Now, I don't have anything that catastrophic. I had one where I actually, I'll tell this one of it. It was a crisis averted show.
Oh.
Where I got there. So I was doing a fundraiser for vets with PTSD. And it was a big fundraiser. It was in Charlotte, actually. And it was like a high-end affair. There was like multiple politicians and professional athletes. It was one of these type gigs.
Yeah.
And the way that the event happens is that a soldier... it wasn't PTSD. It was the Wounded Warriors. So there was what it is they raise money to pair these Wounded Warriors with not seeing eye dogs, but service animals.
Yeah.
And they do one at the end where a soldier who's been waiting for his service dog meets his service dog.
Oh my gosh. So like, and tears for everyone.
Exactly. And I get there and I'm all like happy and smiley. And, you know, I was like, hey, you know, what's the program? They're like, so you're going to go on after the dog.
Oh, no.
And I spent the next half an hour, Molly, pleading with them, please let me go before the dog. No one can follow Soldier Dog. No one. And they're like, I don't know. I know it's our first time doing it, but I just feel like everyone's going to be in a good mood. I'm like, yeah, they're going to be in a great mood. And not let's go hear this guy monologue. Nate said this too. Like, if you don't know stand-up's happening, it just sounds like a mean speech. And I pled with him for like 30 minutes. And the last thing that I said to them, and this is how I convinced them, I said, if you make me go on after that dog and go up for 30 minutes after that, I'm going to be in such rough shape. You're going to need to get me a dog. And they like that made them laugh. And they're like, okay, we'll switch to you before the dog. I'm like, thank God I can't follow Soldier Dog. And it was exactly like I expected. I went in, I had a great set. Everyone's bawling. Like, people are weeping.
Bawling.
Like, a woman fainted from it. It was such an emotional scene that a woman, and I was like, you're going to make me go talk about, like, I got kids. Like, what are you thinking? So it was a huge crisis averted. I thank the Lord for that probably once a week that I was able to convince them out of that.
Oh my gosh. That is a fantastic story. And I... Yeah. Honestly, I mean, I'm really glad for you that they listen to you. I'm actually very sad for us that you don't have the story about doing stand-up.
No, this story is a celebration story. It's one that has a happy ending.
I can't imagine. I cannot imagine.
Well, I could. And that's why I was like, put me before the dog. No one can follow the dog.
No
man.
One. I mean, in anything, just if there's anything that we take away from this podcast is dogs and military servicemen and women trump all things. Like, there is nothing that can top like a military reunion, a dog with a military person.
Yes.
Any of it.
No, you comboed that. You combo Wounded Warrior with dog. You're like, I mean, what are we doing here? Well, I mean, there's nothing can follow this.
Correct. That's where you go and scene. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And scene. And we're done.
Plus, that's when they cut their checks, by the way, too.
Yeah.
So you're like, you're going to have them? No, absolutely not. I'm going to go up here and like, make fun of people and make myself and just, I'm some random dude talking about marriage.
Oh my gosh. Oh, that is amazing. Okay. Well, then on the flip side, I mean, that was a celebration story. Do you have like, what's the most memorable, like positive show that you've done that you're just like, for the rest of my life, I will remember this?
I mean, when you're a comedian and you get your first late night set, that's so when I did, the first time I did James Corden show, which would have been two Junes ago, it was when the book came out. That was awesome. And it went as well as it could have. And
I remember that.
It was,
I saw that.
Yeah, it was great. Now, like late night sets, they don't like mean what they used to as far as like exposure goes. I mean,
interesting.
Not many people watch TV, you know, and like they don't necessarily get like a ton of views, but they're still just very validating as a comedian because, you know, they're just like a stamp of approval. It feels like, wow, I'm like a real boy. You know, I did it. Like
you're
the curtain
boy,
came
man.
Out. Yeah. And I went and I told my jokes and people laughed. And, you know, like the second time I did it, like Kevin Bacon's there. You're like, this is surreal. You know, it's
now
so
you're
it's,
1 degree of separation to Kevin Bacon.
I'm a lot of people's quiz. Exactly. People play that game. They're like, what's your connection to Kevin Bacon? I was like, I've been on television with him.
I mean,
I've met him.
This
I think
is amazing.
I win.
Now, I can say I'm 2 degrees separated.
You're 2 degrees. Yeah.
I'm 2 degrees of Kevin Bacon. I win.
So that was probably it. The funny thing about late night is I know that people kind of know this, but it's in the middle of the day that you tape those things. So you do that and then you walk out and it's like happy hour. You're like, oh my gosh. so bright. I just was preparing. I just did television on the Late Late Show. So that was probably, I mean, I've been very fortunate that I've done a lot of shows and I've had a lot of, like, somebody asked me last time, like, what was the biggest, like, bump in your career? And I was like, I don't have one. Mm-hmm. I have, like, a lot of little ones, like a lot of monumental ones, yeah. You know, that I'm very grateful for. And that was one of them for sure.
Well, I think it's cool, especially just, you know, having followed you for a few years and knowing, you know, a bit of your backstory. And I did read your book, How to Be Married to Melissa, which is just the title of it made me laugh so much.
It's all downhill from there.
It's so good. No, it's so funny. Both my husband and I read it. But I just love hearing more of your story. And especially, you know, I think it's so easy to look at people who, you know, especially in the comedy world or in the acting world or the entertainment industry in general. And, you know, you see somebody once they've become quote unquote successful and you think like, oh, it was so easy for them to get there. But then you actually don't see the, you know, decade, 15 years, 20 years worth of work on the front end to get to that point. And it's that commitment that, you know, that same just grind every single day working towards the thing. And you never gave up. You never gave up. And that's, I think, really encouraging and inspiring for people.
I still might, though. I still might. It's, you know, it's, we'll see. We'll see how that, I got a weekend in Syracuse in the late April. And that looks like a potential give up weekend. So, you know, there's still time. Well, don't write the biography yet.
Hey, you got to come back to Durham, North Carolina.
I'll be there in the fall.
Yes.
I'll be in, yeah.
All right.
And we'll do early shows. You know it.
Yeah. I'll be there for the early one.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'll happen.
Great. Me too.
Dustin, this has been so much fun. Just hanging out.
Yeah. Thanks
doing
for
bits.
Having me, Molly.
So for people that, want to connect with you and, you know, all the things, plug all the things, you know, your podcast, your book, your stand-up shows, where can people find you?
My wife and I have a podcast called Don't Make Me Come Back There. It's a funny podcast about family. Wherever you're listening to this, you will be able to listen to it there. Also got a book called How to Be Married to Melissa, a couple comedy specials on YouTube, Dustin Nickerson Comedy, and my tour dates are at DustinNickerson.com.
Awesome. Dustin.
Come to that Syracuse weekend so I don't quit.
Yes, exactly. Everyone listening who is in the Syracuse area, go get a ticket to Dustin's show and help him keep going. You're awesome.
Thanks, Molly.
I hope this conversation made you laugh like it made me laugh. I'm still laughing thinking about the introversion and extroversion thing. Oh my goodness. Dustin is just, what a gem of a human. I'm so glad we have people like him in the world. I would love to know what part of this episode made you laugh or just made you think or you enjoyed the most. Would you let us know on social media? You can find me at Still Being Molly or at Can I Laugh Pod. You can follow Dustin at Dustin Nickerson. And I would just love if you would tag us and let us know what you liked about the episode. Would you share the show with a friend? Head on over to whatever podcast platform you're listening to. Click that subscribe or follow button and just make sure that you never miss a new episode of the show. Take a moment to leave a review. Leaving a review helps me to know what you're liking, how the show is personally impacting you, encouraging you, or just making your day. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your support. Thank you to the team at Third Wheel Media for producing the show. I can't wait to show you what is coming up in the next couple of weeks. I've got a couple of special episodes coming out with regards to my book. And I'm telling you, you are not going to want to miss next week's episode. So I'm going to leave it a surprise, but you're not going to want to miss it. We'll see you guys next week. Bye.